popular verse around here the past few weeks. Pastor had it in his Selah article from the newsletter, and I used that last, I don't know which time, but I used it recently as well. And it's familiar to you guys, I'm sure. But let's go ahead and read it. It says, "Give, and you will receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. The amount you give will determine the amount you get back." That's in the New Living Translation. The American King James Version is, "Give, and it shall be given to you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together, and running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet with, it shall be measured to you again." And what I'd like to highlight from this verse is sort of the, there's the obvious aspect of how we give to others will, it's very plainly written here, how we'll receive. And so we can think of it from how we look at our finances, typically is how that is used, and that's the context of it. And so that's a good thing. But I was seeing it as a little bit in the context of like limiting God. And so instead of seeing it like, if I want to receive more, I need to give more. It's like we need to realize in the beginning part of that how big and even that limits God, because it's all about what we're doing and what I'm going to receive. And then I start to think about my needs rather than coming from a perspective of we have a God who is so big and can do beyond anything we could ask or think. And so, if you will, I'm going to just use again sort of some simple illustration here of, you know, and I think a lot of people aren't meaning to be greedy or, you know, meaning to withhold from others. Most people, if you ask them, they'd like to be able to give. You know, a lot of people, there's people that are just greedy and they say, no, I don't want to give. Let's be honest. I'd rather just keep it. Why would I give? You know, that means less for me. Somebody else take care of themselves. I don't, you know, from a worldly standpoint, that is actually, that's worldly wisdom. Why would you, that's less for yourself. Now, some people have also tapped into the fact that if you're willing to give to others, somehow that they've seen where, and again, from a secular, just even seeing the law of that in motion, that they're going to get back because other men will see their good works and know, you know what, that's a generous person. That's a good person. And then remember, just use a very carnal illustration, the Godfather. He said, you know, you do me this favor, someday, you know, I may call upon you. And but that day may never come. But he knew the idea of, look, you help other people out and someday you might need that help from that person. And so I got off on a rabbit trail there, but the idea of giving and receiving here, if we think of our need, and again, like I said, that's my point. People aren't trying, I don't think people just go, you know what, I don't want to give to the church. I'd rather just consume all this money I have to myself and buy more things, and they don't really think of it like that, I don't think, because I know how I'm tempted. And I think we're tempted similarly in this arena, but they see their need as pretty great, and what they can give, they're thinking, I can only spare this much from what I have for what I need. And so they see their what they can give or what they're able to give. He's got a little sad face. I don't know if you can see that. It's kind of funny. It's a little cute little guy, but that's a measuring thimble kind of a thing, and it goes up to 2 tablespoons or 1 ounce. But so we see our need as being really large, and in comparison to what we can spare, is we have this large need, and you know, so I can only give. I'd like to give more. You know, I'd like to. I think a lot of people are probably in this place. I know I am sometimes where you're like, geez, I feel the weight of my need is just so big. And so if we can start to imagine it in a different way where our need is here, but what his supply, when we tap into his supply, when we're going to give, now this isn't just for money, but our energy, our time, our talent, our treasure, when we tap into his supply, we're what would you say? We're bolstering and boosting and giving a real shot in the arm, if you will, to what we're able to then give. We're opening an avenue for a benefactor, for a wonderful benefactor. You know, we work in real estate, and we know people that buy houses. I know a teacher that her and her husband, they buy houses and they fix them up or they keep them and rent them. And that takes capital to be able to do that. And so, and I know they own a house, and I just asked her, I said, you know, and she was kind of sharing this with me, and I said, how do you guys do that? Like, what's your secret? Because that's something we'd like to do sometime. And she said, well, my husband's found investors. And so he doesn't have all the capital he needs. They own a few properties. And I mean, you need 20% down to buy an investment property. So if you have your own place, banks are going to look at 20% down. That's, you know, for a $100,000 house, it's $20,000. And if you want to get a decent rental, you're going to probably spend $150,000 maybe. So you're looking at, what's that, 20% of that? That's $25,000. So, or no, that'd be more than that, $30,000. So, but the same thing is true for us. We tap in, we have an investor. He wants to, you know, or do you have matching programs at work? Where if you put a certain amount to your IR, your 401k, your employer will match it. We have an investor and somebody, a benefactor, our employer, if you will, that wants to match what we're going to contribute, wants to match and then boost it as well. And so he's going to get in there and get involved. That's going to give us more seed to sow and multiply our seed for sowing. So just keep that in mind as we go here. But the idea is also, though, it does hold true. How we want to receive from God. Now we think again about our monetary. When we're giving in a small amount, that's what we're going to receive from God. And we're giving a small amount, that's what we're going to use. The same measure you use to give, that's what you're going to use to receive. And we think of that in our natural needs. Well, if we're just giving a little bit, we're not really tapping in. And that's true. It's very true. We have to really stretch in that area, be spirit-led, listen to God, follow the word for instruction on how we give. But also think about how you're going to receive spiritually or how you're going to receive just relationship-wise. If we're closing off in one area, it doesn't hold true that we're going to just open up wide in another area. And so the way that we sometimes limit God without realizing it, you think, you know what, this is my area of finances, this is something I haven't really excelled in this, and so, you know, God's going to forgive me. And he does. He forgives us for all our mistakes. We've all made mistakes in all areas of our lives. I know I have. I can't imagine that there's an area where I'm perfect. There can't be. But limiting God in that way, where even just thinking about this is just monetary, he wants to supply us in so many ways, so many things to us. Love, amply supplied with love. But if we shut off in this area and we think, you know what, it's doubting God, really. When it really boils down to it, we're limiting God in our thinking that he can't come through on this. I can give this much, but if I go here, I'm going to really have to trust God if I obey God and what I feel I'm led to give, it's really going to restrict my life and God's going to have to come through, and we can get to where we're trusting in ourselves and what we do. But let's move on from there. Well, one verse to sort of back that up, another out of two or three witnesses, a thing is established. 2 Corinthians 9:6. It says, again, that's 2 Corinthians 9:6. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. And we talk about the tithe and have taught, I think, a fair amount on the tithe. I don't think anybody could say in this church, well, I don't know, what's the tithe? What is that concept? We're well taught on that. But really, Pastor Mary was sharing this, and I've heard it too from Andy Womack about, you know, it's really arguing about the tithe, because people debate that. If you look online, you'll find debate about the tithe and whether or not that's really for a New Testament believer, because it went away with the law. First of all, and I know you all know this, but it bears repeating, the tithe was done before the law was given. So the tithe is pre-law. So that's established as a spiritual law, if you will. But really, it's not about just the 10%. As a New Testament believer, really grace should empower us to open wide. But 10%, that 10% is a starting point. And it's really about how much do you want to be blessed? How much do you want to receive from God? Because it says, whoever sows generously will also reap generously. So generosity begets generosity. One of the things that I felt impressed about as I was meditating on this was that, as we're talking about, really the point is not just what measure will we use or how are we going to receive more, but about limiting God. And a lack of the fear of the Lord really puts limits on God. And you might think, well, fear of the Lord, I think of it as sort of like I've been meditating on that more and realizing that if I'm more focused on the fear of the Lord, the less focused I'll be on fear of man, and more willing I'll be to share, the more willing I'll be to step out and be bold, offer prayer for somebody, because I'm not concerned with how that's the ramifications for my job, because I have a respect and a fear of my God, my Father. Just like you wouldn't want to let down teammates or your coach. There's many football players that really respect, and they look at that coach as a father figure. And they wouldn't want to do anything that would violate what he has told them are some basic principles. And if we have a lack of the fear of the Lord, really it's probably because we've limited God in some area. Because in his fullness, that's where we're going to find that healthy reverence, healthy fear, because his power and the magnitude of his creative power is just so awesome. Here's a few short scriptures here to illustrate that. But Psalm 50, verse 10, for every animal of the forest and mine and the cattle on a thousand hills. Acts 17 and Psalm 50 talks more about that. He elaborates on the other things that God has created, and we'll get into some other scriptures about just his wisdom and how valuable his wisdom is and the comparisons to his wisdom. Acts 17, 24 through 25, it says, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. And obviously that goes for everybody. So whether we acknowledge him or not, that's up to us. But even for somebody who's a non-believer, there was a big thing, a year ago on Facebook and in the news about Obama made a comment. And President Obama said about how you didn't build that, I think it was, or something along those lines. He was talking to business people, and he was giving sort of an impassioned, you didn't build that. You didn't build, government helped build those roads and bring commerce to you. And so it was controversial. People came out and said, how dare you? And I built my business. The government didn't build my business. Yes, you supplied roads based off my tax dollars, based off my business. So there's a lot of heated debate about the topic. People are posting pictures of, businesses, and the guy saying, the quote in the big sign behind him in his business said, like, I built this. And then there was a diagram of a ditch by his business that kept water from flooding his business, and people pointing out, well, this is what government really did do, so you can have this business. So there was debate going back and forth, I know, but or the road that brought the business to, or people to his business and so forth. But really, God is, he's right. President Obama was right in the sense that you didn't do this on your own strength. You did this, even people who don't acknowledge God or aren't believers, or aren't following after, don't know, don't read the Bible and would burn a Bible. They are doing it based off of God's giving them. It says he himself gives everyone life. So even that person that is, totally against, somebody who's successful, they've done that based off of what God has given them. Now that's just a basic beginning of what God has given them, what more they can have with their relationship with him. But he's given everyone life and breath and everyone else, everything else. How long can we live without breath? Not very long. So he's given us just empowered us, even if we don't acknowledge him. He's already given that. Everything all the talents we have, all those things are all God-given, of course. One of the things that limits God is really our thinking. And when we start thinking about like giving and receiving, we can start to think about our needs. And that's a lot of times how we address it. If you have a need, you need to sow and then, you know, have that come back to you. And there's a truth in that. And there is truth in that, that sowing and reaping is a law, and that's not going to perish. But there's also a matter of when we think about how we're going to receive, we can limit God because of really what we can see ourselves doing. Now, we can imagine, if you think, well, imagine what you can, if this is true, imagine, you know, what God could provide. And so when I've heard that, I've started to think about things that I could get. You know, and I might think about something that'd really be really cool to have a lakeside home and maybe a really nice boat. And you start to think, well, I can imagine a lot. I can imagine a lot. And really, there's a difference between imagining what God can do for you and fantasizing about what God can do for you. And I found myself fantasizing sometimes when I think about that rather than really imagining. And I think one of the things you can look at, or I'll read it to you if you can turn there if you'd like, but James 4:3, it says, again, James 4:3, when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. So, again, it's not like God doesn't want us to have some of our pleasures fulfilled and to have those recreational times and, you know, wonderful things to be able to enjoy and go on vacations that are nice. But when I start thinking about what God can do in my life, but it's toward sort of carnal needs. And again, we have carnal needs. We have heat in the building. I mean, there's nothing wrong with satisfying carnal needs. We have to eat. But if I'm thinking just about how I can consume it on myself, I'm asking with wrong motives. Matthew 6:20 addresses this too. It says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Matthew 6:20 in the International Version. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness and all these things will be given to you as well. So the other part that addresses this, I think, really well, and then I have one illustration we'll wrap up. 1 Timothy chapter 6, he's talking about people and how they're going to become bad, basically. And he says in verse 5, so 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 5, he says, constant friction between people of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. So corrupt mind, they've been robbed of the truth. So they're deceived, and they think that godliness is a means to financial gain. So they think by living godly, by following these things, by giving my tithe, by doing certain steps, I'm going to have great financial gain. But godliness, so contrast, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. It goes on after that and talks about how if we have food and clothing, with that should we be satisfied? Or something right along those lines, isn't it? I don't have the next verse in my Bible, but I know it talks right after that about being satisfied with sort of your daily needs. I can find myself thinking about things coming up months from now, and I just realize, you know what, I have to focus on, and you want to do things, obviously, you're sowing and reaping, but when we start talking about taking on a care for it, months down the road, you know, if there's something you need to change and do differently right now, that's different. But, you know, end of the day, do I have what I need today? Let's focus on what he has given us. We can so focus on our lack. Again, we can so focus on our lack that we miss the supply of what he has given us. I'd like to point out two people that have been at this church and shared a word in due season. David Maloney has done it a number of times, and Robin Roberts, another guy. It's been a long time since he's been here. In fact, I'm not sure where when he was last here, but it was got to be 10, 12 years ago, because it was when we first started coming. But I'll never forget some of the stuff he said, a few things he said, about three words, actually, he said. he said, "Where's your fence?" He kept saying that, coming back to that. Does anybody remember that time he was here, Robin Roberts? I was building a fence at the time in our yard, so maybe that's why I sort of really connected to it. But he was talking about, where's your fence? Where's the boundary? Where have you set your boundary of what I'm going to trust God with, where I'm going to believe God for? What is the territory that you've laid out in terms of how far you're going to reach into the world? I mean, he used it for a lot of things, but he kept coming back to it, asking the question to us, where's your fence? Where's the fence in your heart? Expand the tent stakes of your heart. He was using those analogies. And David Maloney, the principle he's taught here many times is, what do you have in your hand? So, you know, what do you have right now that you can use and put in motion for God? And what I thought of as I was meditating on this was the example of a simple piece of paper. And with this piece of paper, I can fit everyone in this room within the boundaries of this piece of paper. Okay? So this is actually an activity that we do with kids. We give them a piece of paper and we say, for your group of 8 people, you need to figure out how to get everybody in your group within the boundaries, their whole body within the boundaries of this piece of paper. Now, maybe you've seen this before. Anybody seen this before? Sean has seen it before. So the kids get it, and they're like, well, can you lean up against the wall and have one foot in it? You know, they start coming up with all these ideas like tiptoe. And, you know, how are we going to get everybody in it? Nope, your bodies have to be completely within this piece of paper. And they're like, okay. And they go over and they're like, oh, this is silly. So they draw everybody's body inside the piece of paper. And so then you say, all right, guys, you can use a pair of scissors. And they're going, oh, okay, all right. So we can cut it. And then they come up and they say, okay, can we get some tape? And say, nope, not yet. You can't have any tape. And so eventually, thank you, Pastor Mary, they figure out, or somebody figures out. Usually you just give a set of time limit because some groups will never figure it out. But what you do is, or is it, Sean, you know how you've done this the same way with scissors?
It was Ronald McDonald.
Ronald McDonald did? Wow, I'm in good company. I'm in excellent company. And wow, that's a long time ago. Huh? I mean, not long ago. It's only 20 years. And so what you do is you take this ordinary piece of paper and you think creatively, and you're trying to get them to think outside the box. But what we sometimes have to do, and think about this analogy with God, and God, we have these things and we go, well, that's just a piece of paper. How am I going to use it to stretch and give? Or this is a resource that I have. How am I going to, God, I hear what you're saying, that you want me to give whatever, $500 or whatever the amount might be. I feel impressed about that. But I look at my bank account and I look what we're committed for. And I'm saying, how are we going to do that? And if we really stop and ask him, that's where that creativity of God can come in and say, what about that thing buried in your garage? You know, we watch this show Garage Guys, and they go in and they pay like a certain amount of money, and they go in a garage. Everything in it becomes theirs. And they recently cleaned out a garage, and they found a trophy, a Super Bowl trophy, for the Cleveland Browns from 1946. I think it was Cleveland Browns from 1946, worth $16,000. So, but they said, you know what, this is really an artifact. We're not going to sell it. And Jennifer and I were like, I would have sold it. So they gave it to the Cleveland Browns. I thought, you know, it's not like the Cleveland Browns don't have some money somewhere. You know, they could have probably bought it from you for maybe a discount if you want to do that, but at least some season tickets or something. I mean, goodness, it was nice. I'm not taking away from that. That was, if he felt led to do that, I guess. Anyways. But God can tell us the stuff like that, like David Maloney said, you know, what's in your hand? Or if you think about your job and you think, well, I'm just stuck in the same position, just this old piece of paper. I can't use this for much more than what I've got, God. But he says, well, have you thought about asking about that opening? Or have you thought about getting this skill added to your resume? And maybe that open up an opportunity. Or here, what about just talking to this person that you know has kind of seems like they're moving up in the company, or they seem motivated and they seem happy with their job. Just talk to them and say, well, what do you do? And you just take that one step. So you introduce the scissors to kids, and then they go, oh, okay, so we're going to cut this up and then we're going to put it back together. But you tell them, you can't break the paper. The paper can't be broken. Paper has to stay intact. Well, can we cut into it? Yes, you can cut into it. Well, then we'll cut into it and we'll wrap it around the group. You can do that, but you can't cut through. The paper has to go all the way around the group, but not be broken and reattached. And they're going, what? You can't do that. No, there's some trick. And they still think there's a trick. There's a trick. And there is, it's not a trick, but it's a creative, creative idea and a witty invention. And, so what you do is eventually somebody figures it out and they cut a circle, sort of, not a circle. They cut sort of concentric, to make the paper much longer. So they cut it out and I just started this one. Okay. And then from there, you take this now, and then they think, okay, well, once I've got this all stretched out, then we'll fold it together at the end so the paper's unbroken. Nope, the paper was broken. You reattached it. You didn't use tape. You folded it. But the directions are you can't. So you can fit, you know, and you can fit a group of eight people within that boundary if you had this, the rest of this. You get a wide enough circle. However, it's broken and reattached. And so they're going, ah, what's the deal? How do we do this? Well, eventually somebody gets it, usually. And what you do is you cut into this one. It's very simple. You have all the tools you need right there. It's a scissors and a paper. They just cut into this one right here, and they leave it attached here, and they cut a slit through all the way. And now it opens up into this big circle or big continuous piece, just like this. So they have this. And so you can see we easily fit this whole group in here. But at first, when you look at this and you go, that's ridiculous. We're not going to fit the whole group in here. But with a little bit of creativity, a little bit of thinking and giving it time, now you've got this big, huge circle, and it's continuous. It's unbroken. And, you know, I think that's for my, in my life, sometimes I look and go, well, God, what can I do? And I'm not, you know, I'm nothing special. Sometimes we think about taking a risk. Those fears and doubts come up and tell us, well, I can't do that. And how am I going to do that? And, you know, but God, you know, I mean, you're really going to have to show up. Good. You know, Andrew Womack is, I listen to him, he's a great encourager because he says, I'm nothing special. And he'll say this in many of his, encouragement, pieces where he's teaching and encouraging people to be bold. He said, look, my teachers thought I was slow. They said like dim-witted. They thought I was, near retarded. He shares about it openly. He says, I was a slow reader. And I mean, the way he talks and stuff, he's very, very, very gifted at what he does. His teaching is very well laid out and all that, but he doesn't come across like a real witty character, but and he says that, I'm nothing special. You know, I don't have any, you know, anything that men would be drawn to me, but, look what he's done, how God has used him. He says, I'm the greatest example because I, in my natural ability or without God, I wouldn't be doing this. I guarantee you. And so let's just finish with a couple of things. Again, we started off talking about how great God is. And I think this is really about tapping into God's wisdom and his way of thinking about things rather than our way of thinking about things from a limit perspective. Even, you know, just with the job we've been in or, you know, where we've been living. I don't know, whatever the issue might be where you're thinking, you're feeling nudged to make a change. Again, this time of year, I think most people are feeling nudged to make a change of some sort, but not limiting God and just putting your goals in place, but really opening it up and asking God first for wisdom. And it says that in the Bible, it says that wisdom and, first of all, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So fear of the Lord is really key. Fear of the Lord is an underpinning. It's the foundation. If we don't have an awesome respect, it's just going to be a nice thing we add into our bag of tricks to have God and have faith. It's a neat thing. It's a bonus to us, but we're never going to really fulfill or understand the depths, plumb his depths without an understanding first of the fear of the Lord. If we don't have that solid, and I know that's an area I want to grow in this year, it's just a fear of the Lord. You might think, well, duh, I want to grow in, you know, healing miracles and gifts and things. But if I don't have a fear of the Lord, I'm not going to step out and be bold when it's not, everything's not lined up. When there's, on the outside, there are pressures telling me, don't you dare step out. And my flesh, my mind is telling me, don't you dare. Because my mind will go against. My mind will say, oh, wait. Because God will tell me to do something sometimes. And I go, okay. And then my mind goes, well, wait, is this maybe the best time? You know, are you sure? Maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm just thinking that up. You know, you argue with yourself out of it sometimes. So a couple of verses here, I'll read some off. You certainly have quite a few here, but most of them are in Proverbs that I'm going to be reading. But it says that wisdom, in regards to wisdom, this is wisdom speaking, my fruit is better than fine gold. What I yield surpasses choice silver. Proverbs 8:10, choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. Proverbs 3:14, again speaking of wisdom, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. Job 28:15, if you read Job 28, the whole thing is about comparisons of God's wisdom to the finest things in the world. Everything you can think of is covered in there. Things that are still have immeasurable value today. Many, many things. And Job, this one that I pulled out with Job 28:15, it cannot be bought with the finest gold, nor can its price be weighed out in silver. And lastly, we'll finish with this one is, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. One more thought. And I think really a lot of times we can see in the Bible places where our eyes might be needing to be enlightened. And I think we limit him really by what we can currently see. What we can currently see. What can we see ourselves doing? What can we meditate on ourselves? Not what we can fantasize, but what can we really see ourselves doing? And starting to see ourselves step out and do things that we haven't done before. To boldly go where we haven't gone before, to quote Star Trek. And those verses in Ephesians 1:18 about eyes of our understanding, and then 2 Kings 6:17 where Elijah says to Gehazi, open his eyes that he might see. Sometimes we need to have our eyes opened to something we're blind to, and then there's the part about, knowledge and understanding coming in and revealing things bubbling up from the inside as well.